Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello there and welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News Podcast. Barry Murphy with you here from our news team. I'm joined on the line today by our schemes and sheep editor Darren Carty, our political correspondent Pat O'Toole, our building specialist Martin Merrick and news correspondents Declan O'Brien, Noel Barden and Rachel Donovan. Look, another busy podcast this week, folks, with a lot on the agenda. Our front page this week looks at the TAMS tree and the 370 million cash injection for farmers, and we'll come to that with Darren and Mark in just a second. We'll also look at the latest with fertiliser on prices and farm org reaction to the standoff of sorts happening between merchants and farmers at the moment. We'll again look at Mount Bellew Mart and the latest situation there, and plenty more. So look, lots in the next 20 minutes or so. First up, we'll head over to yourself, Darren and Martin, on this new TAMS. Look, it was a big one this week for farmers. And look, it's in some way like a shopping list in terms of farm investment measures that farmers could look at. I suppose there's some new injections into it. I think there's 50 new eligible items, and the grant aid is up to 60% as well. I might go to yourself first, Darren, and if you could just, I suppose, go through the highlights.
Yeah, I think the first thing is that it's good to see it, that this was highly anticipated. There was a lot of pressure on in recent weeks to get this out. And I think that's coming from a lot of pent-up pressure from farmers wanting to put in applications. As you say, there's a lot of new elements in it. I let Martin go through some of the new items in a second, but say the big changes for me, Barry, is that there's higher grant aid for a lot of equipment. So there's some new entry routes. So essentially this is going to work in a tranche system. The first tranche is going to close on the 16th of June. And then there's going to be, whether it be 3, 4, 5 month periods after that, that a tranche opens in. We're not sure. In the last times it was 3 month tranches, and there's 10 entry routes. So there's 10 different sort of schemes. But the big changes here is solar panels is given its own entry route, 90,000 investment ceiling, grant aid of 60%. Young farmers, women farmers and organics, also 90,000, 60% grant aid. A big one for sheep, suckler and dairy farmers around cattle handling is a new farm safety element and 60% grant aid on that also. And then you have your normal schemes then outside that, your animal welfare, and nutrient storage, you have your dairy equipment scheme. The less is one, the low emission slurry spreading, that is still sort of contentious. Confirmed that dribble bars aren't on the list, but the department sources have said to us that they haven't closed the door on that. That was, I suppose, a big topic on last week's paper, on last week's podcast, and this it's good to see that they might be reviewing that. But Martin has covered in more detail, say, the exact new items. So maybe I let him come in on that there.
Yeah, go for it there, Martin. I suppose, look, even Aidan Brennan, our dairy editor, he has a few of the bits and bobs that are in it for dairy farmers. Maybe if you could start there in terms of what's in it.
Yeah, I suppose it's a really positive TAMS to start with, Barry. There's a lot of new items in it, and there hasn't really been much items retracted out of it. Now, for dairy farmers, we're talking the health and fertility monitoring. So your cow collars, your tags, your boluses, plus the base station. That's going to be a huge thing for dairy farmers. Automatic drafting systems as well. You have your drafting gates in there. Like Darren mentioned there, your cattle handling facilities, that's going to be including your batch AI crushes, all your crushes and chutes and such. That's going to be, you know, at a 60% grant rate due to being listed under farm health and safety. Now, dairy farmers are going to be losing out a little bit. One of the contentious issues with it is that milking parlours, we say the actual building that parlours are in, dairies are going to be not granted going forward. What is going to be granted for dairy farmers regarding milking facilities is new clusters, new cluster units, and automatic milking systems. So your robots are going to be there as well for dairy farmers. Big thing for dairy farmers as well, Barry, is new roads. That's a very welcome addition. New roads are going to be given granted at $24.90 per linear metre. So they're kind of some of the bits there for the dairy farmers. Slurry separators as well, screw press separators. There's been a lot of traction coming along about separating slurry. So that's going to be grantable as well going forward.
Yeah, no, it's essential reading there on pages. I see, is it 14, 15 and 16? You know, you've all the ins and outs of it. And for any farmer looking to invest this year, it's very useful information in terms of what's available to them. Myself and Rachel, I might bring you in there, Rachel. Look, we looked at the farm org reaction there on page 16. And look, some of them are broadly positive. I see the IFA was saying, you know, they're positive. But again, they were honing on the dribble bar situation and they're saying it should be in the next tranche of Tam's Tree. You were saying, look, sources are suggesting that might happen from the department, Darren. You're saying, look, they're not off the table completely. But how likely is it, I suppose?
I suppose, Barry, it depends on how strong the research is. So the department across all terms, one of the things that they said at the CAP meetings, at the Farmers Journal CAP meetings, is that every item that goes in had to be assessed and critiqued on environmental standards or sort of this green architecture that the new CAP has been bought under. And say dribble bars lost out on that, just because they had marginally lower ammonia emissions than Trail and Shoe. But there is recent Irish research that would suggest that there's actually no real difference, and it could possibility the dribble bars could be proven better in an Irish context. And I think that's something, it's a message that across all systems that we need more Irish research, that some of this, the decisions that we've seen in CAP or say even now in TAMS, it's been based on international research, and we know our production system, our climate is different. So it's good to see that they are now considering what that Irish research is. And hopefully, if it does stack up, that you will see dribble bars coming in there for farmers to be able to purchase.
And just on the technical side of things, I see the ICMSA on about these timelines, you know, that it's a bit tight, that in terms of farmers getting their applications in and getting approval for them, it'll be too late for them to go build and say a new slurry storage units and tanks, I suppose, towards the back end of the year. You know, it'll be August, September before they get the green light. Is that a problem, or could you see that coming forward, that approval timeline?
Yeah, sure. I suppose it's a significant logistical challenge. The department would have previously said to us that they envisaged that the first tranche would be an April closing date. But I think the challenge with that has been that there's still a lot of outstanding information on this. That's while the list is out and there's a lot of, I suppose, maybe discussions around what's in or what's out, we really don't know the nitty-gritty details. The only thing we've seen in terms of conditions on has been on the solar panel capital investment scheme. So we have to see the terms and conditions on a lot of schemes. The 16th of June, say, closing date for the first tranche. If we're to go by previous experience, you're looking at a three-month window for approvals, at least a three-month window. So, did look at the ICMSA, right? And what they're saying is that there'll be very little work done, say, before September, October, November this year. And the big one for me then as well, Barry, is around how much funding they put towards the first tranche, because I can see the first tranche being way oversubscribed. As Martin said, there's a huge amount of new items. There's going to be a lot of interest in this. We see pent-up demand from farmers that had maxed out investments the last time around, and I can see more applications to be processed. But maybe the fact that there's a wider window that it's not the normal 3 month, say, tranche, that there might be double the funding going to that, or they might decide to front load funding to cater for a higher application rate. I think that when the terms and conditions come out, the first thing a lot of people will be going to is to see what the ranking and selection criteria is, because that will determine how likely an application is to be granted.
Yeah, and just to, before I move on from TAMS, I might bring yourself, Rachel, in on the macro views on things. And I know yourself, Martin, as a young farmer as well. Look, they're saying that the emission of construction costs associated with new milking parlours is a major blow for young farmers in the sector who are looking to start out. What did they say first, Rachel?
Yeah, so I suppose, Barry, their main point was, you know, young farmers trying to get going and put in a new parlour or whatever it may be, improve their infrastructure. They're kind of arguing that young farmers are constantly being left out or disregarded from these kind of supports over the past number of years. John Keane, president of Macra, he said under the last cap, construction costs were eligible for new milking parlours. But it's not appears not to be the case for this year. Macra across the board spoke about and have spoke largely about the exclusion of the second robot for people who applied for robots under TAMS 2, the last TAMS. So basically they're saying that there's kind of these artificial limitations on farmers who have chose to go robotic, and that this was, it's not fair that they're not able to apply for the second one, and these the mooted addition of herd size limits, the 120 and the 160, that's kind of artificially limiting farmers who may have 70 cows and one robot that want to, you know, invest in the second one, that they're not going to be able.
Yeah, and I suppose yourself, Martin, I know you've covered it off before, and you were writing about this and the build up to the list being released, but you know that the stalling by the department was slowing down things in terms of farmers planning. With that emission of the construction costs of the dairy farmers, you know, will they still go building new parlours this year? Is there much of it happening on the ground, new young entrant dairy farmers? Have you seen it at all?
No, I wouldn't say there is a whole lot being done at the minute, Barry. A lot would have been done in the previous TAMS, all right, but it is the glaring omission in the new TAMS. It's probably, you know, like I said, it's a very good TAMS, but that is the glaring omission in it. Rotary parlours are completely scrapped out of this TAMS as well. So you could say that there is a limitation being put on farmers on the number of cows they're making, basically how this TAMS is going to help them with that. I can't see it being included again. If they could do something as regards it being for young farmers, to give a grant for young new entrants, that would be great to see, but it's very hard to see them supporting a greater dairy expansion through funding dairy units, Barry.
Yeah, no, there's some good additions to it, but there is some glaring omissions as well. And plenty of reading there on pages 14, 15 and 16 for listeners, essential for anyone looking at a farm investment this year. But look, the other big story this week we've covered off on page 8, and it's a follow on from our front page last week discussed on the podcast, where we had Anne Finnegan on looking at how fertiliser suppliers reaped mega profits last year off the back of farmers paying higher prices. Declan O'Brien, and look, Rachel, I'll bring you in again on this one. You write on page 8 that urea was back by €50 a ton this week, as a bit of a price standoff is ongoing between farmers and merchants. What's the latest on it?
Well, I think there's a standoff there at the moment, Barry. I suppose you could call it a kind of a game of chicken. The merchants have the product. The farmers believe it's too dear, too expensive. They believe that prices are going to continue to come back. They've already shifted, as you've said. 800 is now the kind of the going rate in the border counties, and even lower. 850 down south, but Rachel will tell of exceptions to that. Now you've got protected urea in the south at about 900, can at 790, 810. 18,612 at 850, 10,020 at 890, 900. But like, the real game here is how are things going to develop, and what impact product coming down from the north is going to have on prices, and also what buyers groups are getting product at. You know, there's some fancy price has been talked about there. We didn't hear, we couldn't stand it up, but getting information out of these boil groups is difficult to the closest thing that the farming sector has to Masonic lodges, apart from some discussion groups. So I think it is when those prices start to leak out, you could see prices kind of beginning to really, the downward pressure beginning to tell. But Rachel has a story there from North Tip, and that kind of indicates what could be happening or what could happen.
Yeah, so I suppose there are reports of farmers being approached in their yards by sales reps, and they're quoting urea for around the 740, 750 mark. So like that's 100 euros a ton under what it's been quoted at in a lot of places, more than 100 euro a ton in some places. You know, it's up near 865 down the south and even in the east. But I think on the other hand, a lot of farmers actually have their urea bought, and I know one farmer in particular bought enough fertilizer for two years the back end of last year at 880 euros a ton. He's kind of raging now, but that's what they were being advised to do, to buy in case things got worse. But that's, as I said, that's a significant reduction on what the merchants and co-ops are largely advertising.
Yeah, no, we've more farm org reaction there again on page 8 as well, Rachel. And I think reading it myself again, it's an element of the game is up for merchants, you know, that the farm leaders are putting that pressure on now. They're saying, look, off the back of those windfall profits last year, that just can't continue. They can't continue to cream it off the back of farmers, is what the ICSA is saying there. And I think the IFA there is highlighting, you know, how out of kilter Irish prices are with the rest of the world. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Noel, I think you have just very briefly, the Taoiseach was in yesterday, the day before, with some commentary on it. Look, I'm not sure what will come from it, but he's saying he's going to look into the profits of the merchants anyway, or the fertiliser suppliers.
Yeah, so Kerry TD, Danny Healy-Ray, raised the issue of Irish farmers paying more for fertiliser than maybe farmers in the UK or Germany or elsewhere in the EU. And he raised it kind of as being an issue for the common market. The EU common market's meant to kind of stabilise prices across the board. And he alleged that there isn't proper competition in the fertiliser sector at the minute. He named four fertiliser companies as working together. These were Golding's, IFI, Grassland and Yara. And what the Taoiseach had to say on that was that he will get Minister McConnellogue to examine the reasons why Irish farmers are paying more for fertiliser. But he did say when it comes to a formal investigation, that would be up to the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission to decide itself. So it doesn't seem like there'll be any proper statutory sort of investigation, but it will be interesting to see what Minister McConnellogue comes back with when he does report back to the Taoiseach, what he does find.
Yeah, the question's going to be asked anyway, I suppose.
Barry, just on that, I think the big thing that is that's standing out for everyone, for farmers, like the fact that you spoke about prices dropping in other parts of the world. It has dropped by 40% in the UK. Do you know, like that's, if they were paying up around the same as the 1,000 euros a ton for urea at the higher price, that's 400 euros less. Like, you know, I think that's really hitting home with farmers, and they're kind of saying, well, why isn't the same thing happening here? It's coming from the same place. You know, it should cross over.
Yeah, no, the dots aren't lining up there at all. And Martin, I'm sure you'd attest to it as well. Like, look, while that kind of price standoff is coming at the moment between merchants and farmers out your part of the country, it's probably not happening just quite yet. I doubt there's many that have fertilizer bought or spread out there.
No, it'd be very much later on in the spring. You're talking March, April time. Some of the dairy farmers would all right, but I think a thing we need all to be conscious of, Barry, as well, is that you need to match up the pricing with the utilization rate as well. Like, if you're talking about getting fertilizer 10% cheaper in 6 weeks' time or whatever, we'll say if you're gone into June or July at that stage, you know, your utilization is going to be way down. I think Darren and Adam have touched on it in the fertilizer focus this week. So that's something to be conscientious of as well. But no, there hasn't been a, there's been a good bit of slurry and some farmyard manure spread. But as regards chemical nitrogen, I've been talking to a couple of farmers, dairy farmers, not so much in the west. They have spread some urea and protected urea, but a lot of farmers have held back this year as well. Just they're a bit more conscientious of the price of it, even though it has come back a little bit.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Look, we'll leave the fertilizer there for the moment and we'll move on to a new one for the podcast. We've it covered off there on page 4 of this week's paper, and I bring in yourself, Darren, and Noel on this one. It's over the suspension of Mount Bellew Mart's license, and that suspension was lifted. And Noel, I think, look, you were in court last week on this one just to cover it off. It's, I suppose, a new one for the podcast. Could you first of all give the background for listeners there?
Yes, I suppose just first to clarify, Barry, I was in court, but I was just listening to the proceedings. I wasn't in the dock myself, on Thursday anyways. So I suppose Mount Bellew, the march in Mount Bellew, it did have its license suspended. It'd be nearly 2 weeks ago at this stage by the PSRA, which is the authority that grants the licenses to march to operate. And the PSRA had said that it had alleged that there was a number of issues that came up when it was looking into the Mart's accounts, particularly with the Mart's client account, which it said had a fairly, it had fallen fairly substantially into the red. And it was back in court on Thursday. And by this time, the Mart and the Mart committee had managed to raise around 183,000 euros from the local community. And this was enough to rectify the issue that had been there with the client account. So I suppose the Mart and the licensing authority, they kind of sat down together, and the Mart agreed to 8 undertakings. So essentially 8 things that it'll do while the PSRA does any additional investigations it wants to do, any looking into any other accounts or that, and it will allow the Mart to operate. It does have its license back. So these 8 undertakings include that the Mart will take on the services of an expert business consultant to kind of look at cash flow. It will warn the PSRA of any issues that crop up. It'll update the PSRA every 2 weeks and how it's doing with these 8 commitments that it took out. And the Mart can't extend any credit from its client account. So it's basically kind of putting the Mart under a little bit more of a spotlight, but it will let sales resume. And I think Darren might have been talking to some of the locals, because the 183,000 euro was fully raised in the local community.
Yep. Yeah, I was at the Mart on Saturday. The Mart is only a few miles away from me at home, and I think part of the reason or part of the strong support is around, say, the nature of how the license was suspended, in that it's not, say, anything the Mart has done recently. It's the, say, the performance of the Mart in recent years has been good. It dates back to historic debts that are over a decade old, and I think that's probably was a big factor in helping the Mart's case, in that, say, a lot of local farmers, a lot of local businesses came in and supported, and were very keen that one of the things I heard is that they could have actually raised more money than what they needed, because farmers, they wanted to keep it running. I suppose there's a lot of sympathy with the Mart because of, say, the issues and how they were caught by, say, 2 main defaulters, TLT International being one of them. And I'd say, Declan, you're probably the only one that remembers from this call. But over 10 years ago, there was over 3 million, say, outstanding in Mart. So I think, look, that's I suppose one of the main issues in Montpellier as well, is that they would have had a debt legacy from that. But no, it's great to see the Mart back up and running. The reaction to farmers that were there on the day was very, very positive. There's a lot of, I suppose, maybe part-time farmers that it suits on a Saturday. There'd be some maybe older farmers that wouldn't, say, maybe travel further afield. We're blessed with maybe 10 marts in Galway, but each one of those marts is serviced and is very active on the day. So it's good to see it. We actually got a lot of calls surrounding whether people should trade, whether the market was safe. And look, it's good in all of these things that the PSRA is overseeing markets, because look, that's what it's there to do. It's there to protect farmers, that when they trade through a market, that they can be assured that their money is guaranteed. So like, while some people might have said, Ginny, it's awful the PSRA closed them, that's their role, that's their job. And it's good to see then that the market was able to, say, get its client account in order and resume trading again, because that brings, I suppose, maybe for anyone doing business, and particularly over the last year when we've seen the increased values of livestock, is there's lots of money changing hands, and it gives certainty to everyone involved in the business.
Yeah, no, it's a good news story to see that. Not that it has been saved, but that the license suspension has been lifted anyway. Noel and Darren, so look, thanks for bringing us that one. And look, the final topic we'll look at, so on this week's podcast, Pat, I see you're on the line there, Pat O'Toole. It's just in relation to Tierlon, on the same page, page four, Tierlon, the cap, the fixed milk price scheme, they've set it at 35%. They came out with this yesterday, Pat. What's the latest that those farmers supplying to Tierlon in fixed milk contracts need to know?
And it's really for them to need to know, because it's very, very complicated. The fixed milk price scheme itself is quite complicated. I suppose, in shorthand, farmers fix their milk forward for a period of time at a fixed price. Tierlon, then Glanbey, introduced these schemes first in 2013. They're now widely used across Irish co-ops. The idea was, as farmers expanded and as new entrants came in, anticipating the end of the quota regime, that a fixed milk price would provide certainty around repayments and around margins. No one foresaw that we would have the transformation in prices that we've seen now. I suppose the system was designed to protect against very low prices more than very high prices, but very high prices coupled with very high costs meant that the fixed milk price schemes that were running through 2022 from previous years were very problematic. So in Tierlon's case, there was a scheme which started in 2021 called FM17 that runs through to the end of 2023 at 32 cent a litre. And there was a general scheme, and then the fixed milk price 16 and 17, FM, or 15 and 16, I should say, FM 15 and 16, they were running at 31 cent, they were running through to the end of 2022. And farmers had combined between these schemes, some farmers had up to 85% of their milk in fixed schemes. And with the cost of production going to 40 cent, with milk price going over 55 cent a litre, they were now on the absolutely the wrong side of the equation. So there were some supports put in place, especially an element of the base price was taken outside, called an input support mechanism, that averaged around 4.5 cent through last year. Which would have brought farmers' price up, you know, to 36.5 cent or thereabouts, as a base price. There was also an interest-free loan of around 5 cent a litre for farmers who were stranded and suffering from cash flow, that would be paid back in 24 and 25. And the third element was the fixed milk price support scheme. And how that was working was that farmers would get paid, instead of 32 cent, they would get 40 cent all through 2022 for their fixed milk. And this was geared towards farmers who were heavily committed. So farmers with more than 35% of their milk in the various schemes. But in return, they would fix their milk through to the end of 2024. And this was problematic for farmers. There was a lot of meetings. There was a lot of heat. There was a lot of emotion. Farmers were facing losses over their potential on price of over 100,000 in cases. And they were very significant actual real losses because they were producing below the cost of production. So what Tierlon have now done is a very significant move.
Yeah, no, it's one we've covered off in the podcast many times, Pat. So I said it'd be worthwhile to go through the ins and outs of it today, and just to cover it off again for that latest development. But look, again, you said it there, it's what the farmers involved need to know. So there's more reading on that one on page four. And Rachel, just while we were on milk, we spoke about this last week in terms of the drop in milk price for January supplies farmers are facing. But you have the latest from, I think there was two more processors out with their January price this week.
Yeah, so we actually had three more there, Barry, since we went to print last week. The latest was Tierlawn on Monday. So they announced a cut of 5.7 cent per litre. Now, that's excluding VAT. So that brings their price back to 53.4 cent per litre for all January milk supplied at 3.6% VAT and 3.3% VAT and 3.6% protein. At the end of last week, we had Carberry and Dairy Gold. Now, Carberry didn't drop as much as Dairy Gold. It's just under a 4 cent per litre drop. And Dairy Gold are the same as Tierlawn with the 5.7 cent per litre drop, both excluding VAT.
Yeah, so near the 6 cent mark there. And again, not hot. I know we went through the reaction with farm leaders there last week. They were skating over it and they had plenty to say, but it's happened now and it'll be interesting to see where it goes next month. But look, that's all we have time for this week, folks, and plenty more in the paper, including a report there from our deputy news editor, Amy Ford, on page 18 that looks at TB reactor numbers. She writes that they're gone up 10% in the last year, but that the incidence rate has fallen. We also have a spread there on egg farmer issues. They're saying that they're facing closure because they're not getting a price increase pass back that's been given by retailers, but the egg packers, the middle person in the middle of the supply chain, is not passing that back to them. And we talked to one farmer who went out of business because of this, that farmer Dennis O'Connell there up in County Monaghan. And then finally, we also have a full spread on farming in Ukraine at the moment, a year on from the war or Russia's invasion of Ukraine commencing. And we look at, I suppose, the impact on farmers in currently occupied or areas that are currently occupied by Russia in Ukraine and how it's a matter of survival for them. And we also look at the impact on grain supplies and in terms of them accessing market, milk, meat and labour. So plenty of reading in that one on pages 20 and 21 of this week's paper. But as I say, look, that's all we have time for this week. Again, thank you for joining and for listening. Safe farming and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.